If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
It's April 2nd. I'm Brian Dean Wright, former CIA operations officer, and this is The Wright Report. Hey, good day to you, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The Wright Report, your daily news podcast. I've got four briefs for you this morning with a throat and sinuses that are still giving me a hard time, but that's all right. We've still got a lot of news to cover that's shaping America and the world. First up, a dairy worker in Texas has caught the avian influenza, also known as bird flu. We're going to talk about what we know and why some people are talking about this in relation to disease X. More on that in a bit. Second, the government of Israel struck the Iranian embassy compound in the country of Syria yesterday. Scores are dead, including a very important military official. We'll talk about why we should care. Third, officials in Germany are adding some new questions to their citizenship screening processes, trying to ferret out those migrants who hate Jewish people. We'll talk about why that is important for us to remember here in the U.S. as well. Fourth, we've got multiple stops in America later this morning talking about illegal migration. And this fact, there are buses of illegals heading to a tiny town in Kansas, population 672. Later, a couple of listener questions today, two good ones about two very different issues. One involves Mr. Joe Biden's Easter proclamation about the transgender issue. And the other question, who's different? It's about tracking America's cows. All right, but first, let's get to our top stories of the morning. At least one person in Texas has been diagnosed with something known as H5N1, which is more commonly known as avian influenza or bird flu. That makes the man one of only a handful of known cases in U.S. history. The Texas Department of State Health Services reported yesterday that the case of H5N1 occurred in a dairy worker. He likely picked it up from one of the known infected herds in Texas, whose owners, unfortunately, have recently sold some dairy cows to operations in New Mexico, Kansas, Michigan, and Idaho, and now all of those states have bird flu in their dairy cows as well. For what it's worth, the dairy worker who contracted this H5N1 virus, he is doing fine. His symptoms are mostly fatigue and something called conjunctivitis or itchy red eyes. He is expected to make a full recovery. The case is unusual in that it hasn't been typically found in cows or in humans, and that's because, as the name suggests, avian flu is much more common amongst birds, especially migrating birds. We actually talked about this back on October 25th. To refresh our memories on it, the U.S. at that time had its first bird flu outbreak. It was in the Gerald County, South Dakota. Shortly thereafter, more outbreaks were discovered on chicken and turkey operations in states like Iowa and Utah as well. As we discussed, though, that is not terribly unusual. Each year, migrating birds leave behind their droppings that, in turn, pass on the avian flu to all the animals and things below. And if those droppings end up on poultry farms, their operations are quickly infected with disastrous results. The only way to deal with it is to slaughter the entire flock of chickens or geese or turkeys. And that is certainly horrible for the farmers, but also for you and your pocketbook. As we discussed, avian flu helped to drive the inflation prices of meat and eggs a few years ago, when a very aggressive form of H5N1 led to a record 82 million chickens and turkeys being culled. Since then, this more aggressive strain of H5N1 has spread all around the world. In fact, all the way to Antarctica. It has hit penguin populations on that frozen continent, with some reported deaths, but thankfully no profound die-offs. And the same is true of human infections, by the way. There have been about 800 or so human deaths from bird flu, mostly in Asia over the decades. But the virus, at least historically, has not been very good or effective at either killing people or making the transition from birds to mammals. The fear, though, this morning is that perhaps that historical assessment is starting to change. We know, for example, that the virus has been increasingly found in dogs, cats, skunks, bears, and even seals and dolphins over the past 4 years. And now we've got this outbreak amongst the cows in Texas. And from those infected dairy cows, a dairy worker caught it from them. The CDC, FDA, and USDA are saying this morning that initial testing has shown that the virus has not mutated in any new or unexpected ways to make it, say, easier for humans to catch or die from it. And yet, based on multiple streams of reporting this morning, there is still notable disagreement and uncertainty about the testing that has been done so far and the implications. So, for example, we have a lot of commentary from officials with the former Trump administration, the current Biden administration, agricultural groups, public health officers. They are all saying that they're a little bit uneasy about this news and what it means. They're not panicked, just concerned about the unusual nature of the outbreak in Texas and the fact that we've got apparently spread from cows to cows and also cows to humans. That suggests that something peculiar is going on. And that is why the federal government and state officials in Texas continue to investigate. So this news out of Texas comes just weeks before the World Health Organization, or WHO, is set to begin a debate about a new global treaty about how member states like America must respond in the event of a next pandemic. And here's what we know. In late May, just about 6 weeks away, the WHO is set to meet in Switzerland to discuss and vote on a draft proposal that would force governments all around the world to participate in global preparations, responses, and data sharing when that organization, the WHO, declares a global health emergency. And to help shape that treaty and the public understand why it's so important, the WHO and global public health officials have been discussing a hypothetical pandemic following the outbreak of something called Disease X. Now, to be clear, these guys say that Disease X is not real. It is simply a stand-in for something that could be real. In fact, supporters of the WHO and this approach of, say, using Disease X as a sample, you know, thought experiment, they say that by imagining this hypothetical disease and a hypothetical pandemic, that assists public health officials to frame how they might respond to a pathogen that is, say, 20 times more deadly than most known existing viruses, or say worse than the COVID pandemic. Supporters of this approach, by the way, and the treaty include some names that you might know. One is the WHO's director, a guy named Mr. Tedros. Also, the former NIH director in this country, his name, of course, the infamous Tony Fauci. However, on the other side of things, critics of these two men and this treaty say that this globalist approach would ultimately take American sovereignty, as the world would obviously be debating about how to respond to a future pandemic. Plus, critics say that they are pretty fearful that the WHO would abuse its authority and label things like climate change as global health emergencies. These critics also say that the WHO and various governments will use this treaty to suppress speech of folks who are dissidents or medical providers who disagree with, say, the WHO's medical analysis. And that happened a lot during the COVID pandemic, as folks know. That's where we had public health officials and bureaucrats like Mr. Tedros or Mr. Fauci, who said a lot of things that were wrong, but they said that they were quite right. And that's why this morning there is some anxiety and trepidation over this avian flu and the fact that we've got cow-to-human transmission as well as cow-to-cow. Because if indeed this virus is mutating or changing in ways that make it more pathogenic, that could lead to not only another public health crisis like the COVID pandemic, but also, over the next 6 weeks, some renewed global demands to adopt this new WHO treaty. With those facts and data in hand, let me now pivot to my analysis and opinion. So let's start with some good news, shall we, at least from the perspective of most farmers and consumers. First, we know that avian flu, as we currently understand it, is not going to likely affect the supply of dairy products from these infected dairy cows. And that's because we've got the pasteurization process that kills the virus. Second, this virus seems to be hitting older dairy cows a little bit harder than the younger. Apparently, it hits their lactation processes a bit harder. And in theory, that could affect some degree of the milk supplies in this country. But the great news is that all the cows, no matter their age, are recovering without issue. So overall, we shouldn't have any changes to the supply of America's dairy. Third, however, let's talk about the fact that we have cow-to-cow transfer of this virus. That would likely mean that this is going to extend beyond the world of dairy. In other words, it could impact our supply of beef, and that's potentially really bad. America's cattle numbers are already at a record low, and that has led to prices for consumer beef products to be pretty high. To emphasize, the USDA thought about this yesterday when they issued their statement. They said that our beef supply is completely safe and you should not be concerned. And yet, I think it is something that we should certainly watch, because if this avian flu spreads into feedlots, that could, at a minimum, affect vet bills, and then the prices would trickle down to consumers to some degree. Nevertheless, more to come on that. Let's keep it on our radars. Next, let's talk about Disease X. For now, I'm going to hold my powder dry on whether or how this avian flu outbreak might affect that WHO treaty or negotiations over it. Still, let's watch carefully. I want to see how this plays out over the next 6 weeks regarding this avian flu business and if the voices start getting a little bit louder about Disease X. But in the meantime, I do want to say this or offer you something, because I've had a fair number of listeners write in asking me about this Disease X stuff, but well before this avian flu outbreak. So here is what I would offer folks who wrote in concerned about this Disease X stuff and WHO concerns. It is absolutely appropriate for you to be concerned about this treaty, about the WHO, and about the folks driving this, because the folks that are driving it are the failed public health officials like Mr. Tedros or Mr. Fauci. And we know that they are the failed public health officials because they have yet to admit their failures during the COVID pandemic. In fact, they have often hidden or dismissed some pretty clear evidence of either their outright mistakes or malfeasance. And so, yes, that means that you have every right to be deeply suspicious of these folks. And that's a real shame, actually, because it would be really great to be able to trust the counsel of our public health officials, obviously. Nevertheless, let's keep this issue, that is to say avian flu and Disease X, on our radars, and I will keep you posted. And with that, let's take our first break of the morning. For subscribers listening at rightreport.substack.com, thank you. Meanwhile, for my other loyal listeners, I offer you an equal thanks. Please do enjoy those ad partners that you're about to hear from this morning. I think it's Jace Medical and Super Beats. They are great. Nevertheless, we'll be right back. I got an email from Mark and Kathy in Central Ohio about JaceMedical.com. Brian, they wrote, "We heard about Jace from your podcast and we ordered some antibiotics and our cholesterol medicines. We just wanted to make sure that we have peace of mind in case things go south, and we're now set. So much appreciated." Well, Mark and Kathy, you are welcome. And this is why I love being so choosy about my ad partners. I can find companies like Jace Medical. They provide life-saving prescription medications delivered right to your door. And by now, you all know how easy it is. You just go to jasemedical.com. You fill out a simple online form, and in no time flat, you will get your medicines. And in some cases, you'll have a quick phone call with one of their board-certified physicians to make sure you're getting exactly what you need. But either way, it's a great service. So go to jasemedical.com. That's jasemedical.com. And when you enter promo code RIGHT at checkout, you are going to get a great discount on your order. Again, folks, that is promo code RIGHT, W-R-I-G-H-T, at jasemedical.com. That's jasemedical.com. And do this today, because there is no telling what tomorrow might bring. Folks, we need to talk about Super Beats Heart Chews, because I don't know how they're making these things. Maybe magic, who knows? But here's what I do know. Just two little chews a day, and I get a shot of energy plus performance and endurance. And that's been true since I started taking Super Beats Chews just a couple months ago. Just two little chews at breakfast, and I'm set. Also, this is amazing. If you pair Super Beats with a healthy lifestyle, the antioxidants in these chews are clinically shown to be nearly two times more effective at promoting normal blood pressure than a healthy lifestyle alone. So do what I did. Go to getsuperbeets.com, that's BEETS.com, and use promo code RIGHT, and that will get you a 30-day supply of Super Beats Heart Chews for free and 15% off your first order. What? Yes. Go to GetSuperBeats.com, use that promo code RIGHT, and get the heart healthy energy you need and support for healthy blood pressure too. You'll be so glad you did. Welcome back to The Right Report. Let's continue with our briefs this morning with a pivot towards international news. First up, the country of Israel likely attacked an Iranian diplomatic compound in Syria yesterday. Let's talk about what we know and why we should care. First, here's the intel. At least 10 Iranians were killed yesterday afternoon, including a senior general of Iran's elite military group called the Quds Force. He, along with seven others, were killed after a missile struck an Iranian consulate building in the Syrian capital of Damascus. Also killed in the strikes were diplomatic staff and local workers. The ambassador and his wife were apparently spared. The Quds Force members who were hit had apparently been organizing terror operations in the nearby country of Lebanon and supporting the Syrian regime, which, of course, is led by a fellow named President Bashar al-Assad. Israeli officials yesterday neither confirmed nor denied their involvement in these strikes. Leaders in Tehran, however, said that they were directly to blame. And based on what we know, that is probably correct. Israeli military forces have dramatically ramped up their strikes deep into Lebanon and Syria. Their targets have been mostly Iran's military leadership and their proxy forces like Hezbollah operating in those two countries. As for why we should care about this latest news, listeners may recall my brief last week about U.S. service members being ordered by the Biden White House to go to build a dock and a pier off of the shores of the Gaza Strip. Well, the Washington Post reported over the weekend that Mr. Biden's plans to do that are still poorly developed and poorly thought out. The Post argued over the weekend that Mr. Biden's plans will thus put U.S. service members at much greater risk of attack, mostly by forces backed by Iran. And that would certainly be the case, as Tehran this morning is getting beat up by the Israelis and looking for revenge. Hundreds or even thousands of American troops would then just be sitting off of the shores of Gaza as a very enticing target. So that's why I'll continue to take the temperature of the Middle East over the next few weeks, thinking about how issues over there in places like Syria could affect the risk of our men and women in uniform in that region on both land and sea. By the way, to that point, U.S. sailors and Marines are set to start to build that pier and the dock in about 3 weeks' time. More to come. Next up, we've got related news about Israel and the Jewish people this morning, but not in the Middle East. It takes us to Germany with, I think, an important message for America. The newspapers called Der Spiegel, the Times of Israel, and the Washington Post report that authorities in Berlin are adding new citizenship questions for prospective Germans, the migrants, of course, asking them about Jews and Israel. The hopeful migrants wanting to become Germans must now correctly answer questions about, well, first, the name of Jewish places of worship, second, the founding year of Israel, and also Germany's historical obligation to the Jewish state based on that country's genocide during the Holocaust. In announcing these new questions, the German Interior Minister proclaimed that, quote, anyone who does not share our values cannot get a German passport, end quote. For what it's worth, these additions are being included in the citizenship exam after an increasing uptick in violence against both Jewish people in Germany and abroad, largely, as folks may recall, by leftists or Muslim migrants from places like North Africa and the Middle East. And with those quick facts and data, let me now offer you my analysis and opinion about why we should care. And to do this, let's actually leave Germany behind. Let's come home. Let's remind ourselves of this next fact. The United States has been, shall we say, overrun by 7.2 million illegal aliens under the Biden administration. That includes hundreds of thousands of gotaways. Now, as we've discussed extensively, none of these people have been properly fully vetted for either their criminality or their ties to, say, terrorism. And that is horrifically bad. But often in that conversation or that debate, we don't talk about this next issue, and that is that none of these illegals are being vetted for their cultural or political values either. And they should, because it's kind of a big deal. We are allowing in people who come from cultures all around this world that, say, treat women poorly. They kill gay and lesbian folks. They hate Jewish people. And some of them have participated in a genocide against Christians, especially in the Sahel region of Africa. And that's why this news from Germany is so important, I think. It's telling us that even if these illegals who are coming over the border aren't, say, criminals, it still doesn't mean that they should actually be a part of our American family. They should be vetted for their values as well, just as, by the way, has been historically done at embassies and consulates abroad. And as ever, that is something that we can and should be doing right now, either on the border or, again, pushing folks back to embassies and consulates abroad. The White House could do that, but they don't. And that's yet one more reason for why their decisions about the border are so very wrong. Indeed, this administration is forever changing the culture of this country, and not necessarily for the better. More to come. And that takes us to our final related piece of news of the morning from three states in our union that are struggling to deal with illegal aliens. We begin in Texas, where a judge just ruled that the illegals that bum-rushed the border back on March 21st and attacked some Texas National Guardsmen, those migrants will be set free. The judge decided that the district attorney's office in El Paso was taking too long to investigate and charge these men for their criminality, which, just to emphasize, was caught on film. Nevertheless, the now 70-plus illegals will be released, most of them. Some may be kept in detention if they are what's called a federal detention order, but otherwise, all of those men will be released. Next, we make a quick stop in Iowa this morning, where the governor there is set to sign a bill allowing state and local police to arrest any illegal alien who has been previously deported. Republican Governor Kim Reynolds is expected to sign a bill similar to the one that we have discussed in Texas called Senate Bill 4, but the Iowa bill will actually make it a crime for an illegal alien to enter or re-enter that state if he or she has previously been deported or denied admission to the U.S. Once Governor Reynolds signs the bill, it is expected to come into effect this July. The new law would join others in Texas, New Hampshire, Tennessee, and Oklahoma that are trying to address the federal government's failure to stop this flood of illegals. For what it's worth, activist groups in Iowa say that this new law is discriminatory and it is inhumane. That is why they are promising this morning to fight it with all they have. Which takes us to the third and final stop of the morning, back to the state of Colorado. Officials and charities in what is the sanctuary city of Denver are buckling under the stress of the record number of illegals in the Mile High City. In fact, progressive churches in that town are starting to close down their shelters for a lack of resources. At least that's based on some local reporting. They interviewed the senior pastor at a place called the Denver Friends Church, who said that his congregation is working to send the 200 illegal aliens that they've been taken care of to the city of Haviland, Kansas. That has a population of 672 people. It is unclear why the church is sending the illegals to that tiny little town or whether the town's officials are aware that buses are on the way. For what it's worth, if 200 illegals show up to a town of 672 folks, that is a population increase of 30% overnight. Meanwhile, officials also in the city government of Denver are pleading with illegals like those 200 to just leave. To the point, a fellow named Mr. Andres Carrera, he serves as Denver's newcomer communications liaison. He was filmed over the weekend telling illegals that their time in Denver is up and they need to go elsewhere. He named Chicago and New York as the best places that they should go to for free housing, free food, and guaranteed jobs. He also said this, very interesting, that while he is not legally allowed to force them to leave, quote, if you stay here, you are going to suffer even more and I don't want to see this, end quote. He finished his diatribe by saying that he would be willing to send them anywhere in the world. For example, he said that the city of Denver would charter a bus right to the Canadian border. And that caused a little bit of heartburn with some Canadian officials, as you would imagine. Denver's mayor then clarified. He said that the buses would drive right to the border, let them off, and if the illegals chose to walk over the border, well, that's their choice. Finally, reporters with 9 News there in Denver captured Mr. Carrera concluding his remarks to the illegals by asking them a question. How many of you, he said or asked, want to leave Denver? Unfortunately for Mr. Carrera, none of them raised their hands. Then he asked, how many of you want to stay in Denver? To which one of the illegals shouted to him, todos, which is Spanish for everyone. Oh boy. With those facts and data, I'm just going to let all that news just speak for itself this morning. No deep analysis or opinion. Just one quick suggestion. If you know anyone in rural Kansas or rural areas that are around sanctuary cities, you may want to flag this development out of Colorado. Because what is clear is that Democrats and leftists who are obviously in serious financial trouble this morning because of their sanctuary policies, they are looking to dump their burden on others. And that includes tiny little towns in places like Kansas with just 672 people. So, folks, do keep this in mind if you happen to live in one of these small towns. This issue may impact you directly, one unexpected busload at a time. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we conclude this morning's episode of The Right Report. But I've got one more thing before I let you go. We'll be right back. It is the morning, but we need to talk about tonight. And that's because you need a good night's sleep, for Pete's sake. So get yourself a Ghost Bed. Yes, it is the company that I think makes the finest mattresses in all of America. And you know that's true because I have one, the Lux model. And boy, oh boy, do I like it. But they've got other models too. There's the Classic. Also, that fancy massage bed. Oh, my. And there's also the 3D Matrix, which, again, sounds so scary, kind of like a black hole, but I really do want one. But no matter the model that you choose, gotta get one of these things. The mattresses are built with high-quality materials, folks. Fine craftsmanship as well. And you will feel both when this thing is delivered right to your doorstep. As always, they have a 101-day trial period with free returns. So, folks, get yourself a Ghost Bed and get 50% off when you do. Go to ghostbed.com/right, that's W-R-I-G-H-T, and get 50% off your Ghost Bed purchase. Again, that's ghostbed.com/right, and get ready, because once this bed arrives, you are going to be off to a great night's sleep. I guarantee it. Somewhere this morning in capitals in America and Europe, leaders are planning how to best seize Russian financial assets. We spoke of this in early January and all the related threats to the U.S. dollar. But it could also have terrible impacts on our pocketbooks, too. So if you're looking for ways to diversify your investments, and boy, we should, consider physical gold and silver. And consider American Hartford Gold. They are the precious metal dealer that I use and trust. When you give them a call, they will explain how to protect your savings and retirement accounts by purchasing physical gold and silver, and feel very comfortable using American Hartford Gold as they have an A-plus ranking from the Better Business Bureau. So either give them a call at 866-353-2694. Again, that's 866-353-2694. Or just text them. Text RIGHT, W-R-I-G-H-T, to 65532, and gosh, that's easy. Again, text W-R-I-G-H-T to 65532, and when you do, they are going to give you up to $5,000 worth of free silver on your first order, depending on your total purchase. So give them a call at 866-353-2694, or text my last name, W-R-I-G-H-T, to 65532. And folks, buy that physical gold and silver with the American Hartford Gold. Welcome back to The Right Report with one more thing before I let you go. It is two listener questions today sent to us from my paid subscribers at rightreport.substack.com. First up is Jason out by Craig, Colorado, which, by the way, I've been to a gorgeous little spot out there. Brian, he wrote, if we're to be fair about the Biden transgender Easter drama and fight, well, first, the egg drawing or artistry rules that you mentioned yesterday, they have been around for a long time, multiple administrations. Plus, Biden didn't actually take any active steps like hosting a trans event at the White House during Easter. So I think this one, okay, it's bad, but not quite as a big of a deal as some are making it out to be. All right, well, Jason, I really appreciate your analysis and opinion, and I think it's certainly fair. And you are right about the egg drawings and the rules related to all that artistry. The American Egg Board clarified that for us yesterday. But as for the proclamation itself, I think that this is where reasonable people can disagree. As AI Brian mentioned yesterday, the White House could have issued a celebration be observed or acknowledged on April 1st, the day after Easter. And that could have ensured a degree of deference or reverence for Easter. But fair enough if you just disagree with that. The much bigger issue, though, the issue that I think we should be focused on, rather than the eggs and the proclamation, frankly, is this. I shared with you all last summer that people who believe themselves to be trans are 6 times more likely to be autistic as well. In fact, I shared with you some statements made by what are regarded as the leading trans-affirming psychologist in the field. One is named Dr. Diane Aaron-Saff, and the other is Dan Karasik. And as they said, quote, an astonishing percentage of our trans patients are autistic. They then added that, quote, anyone who is doing gender work sees a lot of people with autism spectrum disorder more than expected for reasons we don't know. And that is never discussed when these proclamations by politicians are made, including the one by Joe Biden. But I think that link to autism really should be a part of the conversation and debate, because as the CDC acknowledges about autism, we know that folks with it suffer from delayed cognition and learning skills. They also fixate and obsess. Autistic folks can also be quite impulsive, and they don't understand or they often misunderstand risks. In other words, autistic kiddos who say that they are transgender may not be trans at all. It is simply an expression or extension of their daily struggle. And that seems extraordinarily relevant if doctors and parents are going to inject them, as they do, with irreversible treatments or otherwise conduct irreversible surgeries. So that, I think, is the broader point that I wish we could discuss when talking about transgender care. Because for me, it's not ultimately about the Easter proclamation or the egg drawings. Rather, it is about protecting kids who can't protect themselves. Finally, we've got another listener question for us, also out of Colorado, Richard in Grand Junction, also a great place. Brian, he wrote, I think that you should cover something called EID involving America's cattle. A lot of us out here are pretty worried about it, and I bet your listeners would benefit from learning more too. Well, Richard, I agree with you. In fact, I was leaning towards including this in today's episode. It just ran a little bit long. But here is a tease. For folks who are unaware of this issue, there is a new national system being funded and built to track America's cattle using electronic IDs. Now, on one hand, there is nothing new about this. We have had cattle branding or ear tags that have done much the same for decades, if not over 100 plus years. But this new system is different in one very important way. It would ultimately give the federal government a lot of knowledge about where exactly America's cows might be at any given time. And that could be quite helpful to some people, namely climate change activists. They could then compare that data to satellite data of methane emissions. They would use that to start lawsuits that would then shut down the American beef and dairy industry. That is the fear. So Richard, yes, you and your neighbors are quite right to be worried about this. And we're going to cover this in far greater detail, probably later this week, but definitely more to come. Folks, if you would like me to answer one of your questions on the podcast, it is easy to do. Either donate via my Stripe account, which you will find a link for in the show notes. Just make sure you leave your email and I'll be in touch. Otherwise, go to rightreport.substack.com, sign up, and at the bottom of each day's Substack post, you can leave me a comment or ask me a question. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we conclude your morning brief. As always, I will see you tomorrow, God willing. Until then, I leave you with the creed of every good spy and every wise American. They're the words from the Gospel of John, chapter 8, verse 32. And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Good day.